So the word varna and ashram. Does anybody here today here know what the word varna means? Can anybody suggest what the Sanskrit word varna refers to? Category, very good, yes. Varna also means color. It also means occupation as well. And ashram? Any ideas for ashram? Yes, exactly. So a very simple meaning of ashram is place. Therefore, varna and ashram are occupational duties as well as residences for our life as well. And Lord Krishna, he begins this discourse on this topic in the fourth chapter, text number 13. And I would like to request if the entire assembly can kindly repeat the next words with me, okay? So we'll all practice reciting some Sanskrit from Krishna Bhagwan himself. Can you imagine Krishna here, standing before us in his deity form, actually spoke these words? And Bhagavad Gita, if you look at history of religion around the world, probably Bhagavad Gita is one exclusive text that God himself spoke. Many texts you find were repeated by God's devotees and saints. But Bhagavad Gita was where Krishna himself spoke only a few years ago, 5,000 years ago in northern India, Kurukshetra. So please repeat the following words with me. Chatur Varnyam Maya Srishtam Guna Karma Vibhagasha Tasya Kartaram Apimam Vidya Akartaram Avyayam. And for the translation, you can all please repeat with me. Lord Shri Krishna tells Arjun, according to the three modes of material nature and the work associated with them, the four divisions of human society are created by me. And although I am the creator of this system, you should know that I am yet the non-doer, being unchangeable. Now, Srila Prabhupada, he comments on this verse with the following purport. Prabhupada explains, Lord Shri Krishna is the creator of everything. Everything is born of him. Everything is sustained by him. And everything after annihilation rests in him. He is therefore the creator of the four divisions of the social order, beginning with the intelligent class of men, technically called brahmanas, due to their being situated in the mode of goodness. Next is the administrative class, technically called the kshatriyas, due to their being situated in the mode of passion. The mercantile men, called the vaishyas, are situated in the mixed modes of passion and ignorance. And the shudras, or laborer class, are situated in the ignorant mode of material nature. In spite of his creating the four divisions of human society, Lord Shri Krishna does not belong to any of these divisions because he is not one of the conditioned souls, a section of whom form human society. Human society is similar to any other animal society, but to elevate men and women from the animal status, the above-mentioned divisions are created by Lord Shri Krishna for the systematic development of one's Krishna consciousness. The tendency of a particular man toward work is determined by the modes of material nature which he has acquired. Such symptoms of life, according to the different modes of material nature, are described in the 18th chapter of this book, Bhagavad Gita. A person in Krishna consciousness, however, is above even the brahmanas. Although brahmanas by quality are supposed to know about Brahman, the supreme absolute truth, Krishna, most of them approach only the impersonal Brahman manifestation of Lord Shri Krishna. But a man who transcends the limited knowledge of a Brahmana and reaches the knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, becomes a person in Krishna consciousness, or in other words, a Vaishnava. Krishna consciousness includes knowledge of all different planetary expansions of Krishna, namely Ram, Narsimha, Vaman, etc. And as Krishna is transcendental to the system of the four divisions of human society, a person is in Krishna consciousness is also transcendental to all divisions of human society, whether we consider divisions of community, nation, or species. So in this verse, Srila Prabhupada explains that the four varnas are Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras. Now in English, we understand this to be laborers, or the common person, business people, then we have members of parliament, members of state, and then we also have the priestly order. And these four divisions of occupation are said to form a successful society for each and every individual. And in fact, you find that one of the most intelligent scholars in the Western world, Plato, even in his book, The Republic, he also thought of a similar society by which all the needs of a community, all the needs of a family and of a nation can be fulfilled. Now, what's very important, and I think for today's gathering, is not really the system of the varna. Because we have varna and we have ashram. So the varna is something that one can't enforce upon oneself. So if anybody here works, in fact, anybody here work in social services? Just raise your hand. Any doctors? Okay, so that's medics. Any priests? Okay. Then obviously we have businessmen. So we have many people in various types of occupations. So this is not something that one can enforce upon another, but is rather according to one's qualification, one's tendency, and one's knowledge. Of course, parents want to give their children the best education. Recently, there were some statistics that came out how in universities like Cambridge and Oxford, you'll find that even a child which may not have gone to private school ends up going to Cambridge and becoming a leading doctor or a leading member of society. And then you also have some children that obviously go to private school, go to such elite advanced universities like Cambridge and Oxford, and also come out very successful. But also you get the opposite too. Such children who went to private school, whose parents spent so much money on them, like you're looking at probably over £100,000 for 18, 19, 20 years of education. Their children, became something that the parents did not expect them to become. Artists or something. I won't say that loudly. So therefore, within the Gita, we understand that every child, every living entity has their own tendency. And even if an intelligent child is born in a poor family, in a family of people who are not really materially affluent, such a child can actually become a great leader, a great influential person of society. But this is something which nature dictates according to one's tendencies and propensities. But what's very interesting is the second half of this topic, and that's what I would like to discuss with you all here today. The second half of the topic is ashram. Now, in the same way that there are four occupational duties by which one can become successful and achieve in this world, there is also the aspect of ashram, of which there are also four divisions. Now, the very first division of the ashram system is brahmachari. And the word brahmachari actually means to be a student. And therefore, you find that every person in this world, as soon as they're able to walk, talk, at least up until the age of 21, 25 even, 18, 19, everyone is encouraged to become a student and get education. So this is the first aspect of the system of ashram, that one must become academically profound. One must become a student. And then the second aspect of the ashram, which is very much important for all the assembly here today and relevant, is grihastha. And grihastha means marriage life, married life. And after grihastha, we have vanaprastha, which means the status of being retired. And then we have sannyas, or renunciation. And the reason why sannyas and vanaprastha are recommended is because one's aim in life, according to Sri Krishna Bhagavan, is to not only become successful in this world that we're living in, but also to become successful in our own personal lives, with the aim of returning back to the kingdom of God, returning back to the residence of the spiritual world. And therefore the stages of vanaprastha, of retirement, allows family members who have become implicated so much in their children, relatives, community, and various objectives of life, allows them to now slowly and very gradually become detached. And then finally, in the stage of sannyas, allow them now to completely fix their minds upon the feet of God, having achieved one's various objectives and aims of your previous ashram, which was the grihastha. The grihastha ashram, I believe over here, please raise your hands if you are married. Yes. So the grihastha ashram is the ashram that we are all in, and also me as well. We are all in here today. The grihastha ashram begins with the ceremony of vivaha, the ceremony of marriage. And you find that each and every ashram has a particular process by which one then gets initiated into that particular ashram. And therefore, the marriage ceremony, or according to Sri Krishna Bhagavan, the Vivaha Samskar, contains the laws and the secrets by which a family person can become successful. Now, unfortunately, with the way society is flourishing at the moment, Vivaha Samskars, or the initiatory rites, which makes one a householder or a grihastha, are nowadays nothing less than just a mere formality, a mere ceremony, where the priest comes, the bride and groom comes, they sit there like this, and then suddenly there's some fire, they walk around the fire, or if they're in a church, they stand opposite each other, few moments of words from the priest, maybe a kiss on the cheek, or a shake of the hand, or a touch of the feet, then after that, shadi hogi. We are now married. And then what happens after that is husband and wife then start to make up their own rules. What time are we going to do this? What time are we going to eat? How are we going to behave with each other? Who's going to shout? Who's going to cook? Who's going to work? Who's going to do the diapers, the nappies? When to have children? Then a whole set of laws which every one of us make. But how about the laws of God? How about Krishna's secrets? How about Krishna's advice on how one becomes successful? And all of these advices are actually in the Vivaha Samskar, which is why in ISKCON, in the Hare Krishna movement, when two people come to get married, the marriage ceremony is done according to the ancient tradition of thousands of years ago. And in that marriage ceremony, bride and grooms become educated. They learn about the laws of marriage life. And only when one even has a concept of what the higher principles of marriage life is, only then can bride and groom, or husband and wife, actually start to decide what to accept, what to reject, how to work around that to make our life successful. So today I wanted to discuss some of those principles that are initiated on the day of marriage for grihasthas. One of the foremost principles that are initiated for a married husband and wife is the type of relationship that a husband and wife should have. And now I've asked my parents this question, I've asked my grandparents this question, I've asked uncles and aunties this question, and believe it or not, every single one of them gave a different answer to what Krishna says. Somebody said, oh, one is master, one is servant. One is senior, one is superior. Sometimes they say we are equal, but also we have differences. Now what does Krishna Bhagavan explain? Krishna Bhagavan, at the time of when the bride and the groom come together to live together as a married couple, in the ceremony Krishna Bhagavan invokes a sacred mantra, which the groom echoes to his wife. Sakha saptapadi bhava sakhyam te gameyam sakhyam te ma yoshyaha sakhyam te ma yoshtyaha. The word sakha was used four times in this mantra. And the word sakha means exactly. Krishna Bhagavan explains that the successful marriage, the successful grihastha ashram, is where husband and wife actually deeply and honestly consider each other as best friends, as sakhas. And therefore the last word in this vow, now don't forget, for those who get married, according to Vivaha Samskar, you are taking an oath. You are taking a pledge to be like this. The last line of this verse, Ma yoshtyaha. As best friends, there is no question of separation. Because as best friends, there can be no separation. There is only commitment. There is only love. And therefore, in the grihastha ashram, husband and wife have to then daily, not just on the marriage day, and hopefully this vow was echoed by the priest and heard by the bride and groom, because this will benefit them for the rest of their life, to know exactly what we are married for. When husband and wife understand each other to be best friends, then there is unconditional love. The grihastha ashram, in fact, the bride and groom, is none other than meant to be a representation of Radha and Krishna. Because Lakshmi Narayana, Radha and Krishna, these two personalities are the ideal husband and wife. And therefore, in this world, when two souls who are not connected together wish to come together to raise their Krishna consciousness, to raise their spirituality, to raise their ethics and their morals, the word vivaha is used. And word vivaha does not just mean marriage. The word vivaha means that ashram by which two people come together and they go back to Godhead. That's actually what marriage life actually means. Where two people, vivaha, enter a platform which takes them back to God. Look how beautiful marriage life is in Krishna consciousness. Look how amazing this ashram is. We haven't even got to vanaprastha. We haven't even discussed brahmachari or sannyas. We're discussing grihasthas because everybody here are grihasthas. And what is the meditation of the grihastha? What is the success? How does one actually practice unconditional love? First and foremost, when one becomes a devotee of God. And therefore, during the Pani Grahana, when a husband and wife come together to take vows of harmony, the moment the husband grasps the hand of his wife-to-be, the sacred verse is chanted, Mama vrate te hridayam dadato, mama chittam anuchittam te astu, mama vacham ekamana shushasva, brihaspatistva hrinaktu mahyam. Such a beautiful verse. Mama vrate te hridayam dadato, may your heart be fixed on my life's goals. May your mind follow after mine. With body and soul, may we be devoted to Krishna's words. May brihaspatistva hrinaktu mahyam. May Lord Sri Krishna join us together in marriage. In this way you can see on how when the heart and the mind are following together with Krishna in the center, these are steps towards a successful marriage. And in fact, every day is a reminder of the attraction that husband and wife have for Krishna, and then is also reflected in one's family, one's children, and one's community. And therefore you find that on the initiation of marriage, when bride and groom for the very first time feed Mahaprasad, you've probably seen that towards the end, the bride and groom come together and they feed Mahaprasad. What is the vow recited for that? Such an outstanding vow. Yad eta hridayam tava, tad astu hridayam mama, yadidam hridayam mama, yad astu hridayam tava. This vow which the bride and groom take together, what is my heart, let that be yours. What is your heart, let that be mine. Such a sacred vow. Can you imagine if every day, husbands and wife, who understood these principles of Krishna Bhagavan, and you can see these principles of Krishna Bhagavan are not really anything which is going to hurt you. It's going to increase your marriage life. It's going to increase your devotion, increase your spirituality. And what's most important, these types of behavioral models that Krishna sets for grihastha ashram would give you peace. It would give you shanti. It would give you affection and love. Because why? We are following our marriage life according to the principles of God. This prayer, what is your heart, let that be mine. what is my heart, let that be yours, has a very, very deep meaning. And Krishna Bhagavan elaborates on this point in the Bhagavad Gita. He says, Ishvara sarabhutanam hridayeshe arjuna tishtati. O Arjun, I sit in the hearts of every living entity. And therefore, this verse which we recited earlier is a reminder for husband and wife to come together every day, at least during the time of bhojanam, at least during the time of prasad, dinner, lunch. If you have breakfast too, breakfast. And let that exchange of prasad be a reminder for husband and wife that have we ended our day? Have we begun our day understanding the core of your heart, Krishna? Are we stimulating and inspiring the Lord of your heart, Krishna? Are we making you peaceful? Are you feeling that you are experiencing the love of the Lord of your heart, Krishna? And you can imagine where every day, husband and wife, according to the laws of the Grihastha, remember and echo such words. What will the state of that union be? Their assembly, their friends, that state of union is nothing less than the union of God and his devotees. Because the central pivot is love and peace. And only when such vows are understood by society, then when husband and wife, because sometimes in life, especially in the Grihastha ashram, when husband and wife come and they face many, many challenges, whether it's bills, whether it's diseases, whether it's other family pressure, or boss or employer pressure, or maybe sometimes natural disasters in this world, these verses, these sacred laws of the Grihastha ashram will remind us to be following. These laws remind us of what our duty is. It is amazing on how many marriages actually survive nowadays. And you'd find that whenever you ask certain individuals why it was the case, you'd always find it was because of a lack of understanding, a lack of affection, a lack of true commitment. And therefore, in the sacred ceremony of Grihasthas, the Vivaha Samskar, when husband and wife start to follow such principles, only then can they actually be called Grihasthas. Otherwise, husband and wife, even if they're devoted to Sri Krishna, even if they're non-devoted, it doesn't matter. Providing husband and wife are following the laws of God, you'll find that such people are called then Grihasthas. And then the quality of that Grihastha will be all those qualities you find in the temple. The Grihastha ashram is meant to be the temple in the home. The Grihastha ashram is meant to be the manifestation of God in this most sacred union of husband and wife. And therefore, and only therefore, the Grihastha ashram is one of the ashrams. Otherwise, what does marriage life have to do with spiritual life? What does marriage life have to do with going back home, back to Godhead, or purifying one existence? It is because Grihastha ashram is an opportunity for individuals, two souls, to come together and practice the most highest principles of God. And therefore, this education for the Grihastha ashram, for Grihasthas, is extremely important. And Srila Prabhupada, he has come to allow people like ourselves who are living in this world. We are working outside. We probably don't spend so much time. I probably spend with my son at home Monday to Friday. I probably spend 1 hour and a half each day maximum. Your life is so busy. And probably the same for all of you here. Then the question rises, how much time do you spend with your wife or your husband? Sometimes people work too late. Sometimes weekends. But the Grihastha ashram has so many beautiful and sacred vows and laws and regulations that it still allows those individuals of that family to make material and spiritual progress. some of these spiritual aspects of the Grihastha Ashram I've now discussed with yourselves and presented some of these points. And some of the material also very, very important. Because the Grihasthas are meant to also be the ashram that is the foundation and the support of the other three ashrams, or the Brahmacharis, Vanaprasthas, and Sannyasis. And therefore the Grihasthas also have to have some source of income. And therefore for the Grihastha, it is explained that particularly in that ashram, the wife or the bhariya, or the also called the Ardhangani, is considered to be the aspect of that union which has the ability to destroy any obstacle which may come forward in that family. Please note that in married life, according to Lord Shri Krishna, the husband does not have the ability to deal and destroy obstacles. Unlike what I or many of the men here may think. We are the ones. we can definitely destroy. It is the wife. Because in the Grihastha Ashram, the wife is initiated as the representation of the energy of God, who is Radhika. And therefore, during the Sindurdan, Sinduriva Prahdvane Shuganashovat Prahya Patayanti Yahvaha Gridasya Dharvara Shonavaji Kashta Bindan Nunupinvamanaha. On a day of marriage, the moment when the priest echoes to the bridegroom to place sacred red powder, kumkum, sindur, upon the center parting of the bride, she immediately, Sinduriva Prahdvane Shuganasho, she becomes the qualified representation of the destroyer of all obstacles in our life, Sri Radha. And as this verse explains, the wife has the ability to even stop an ocean over flooding a country. That's what this verse explains. That is how powerful the Ardhangani, or as in this Vivaha Samskar explains, the better half, is in a union. And therefore the husband, he allows this position to his wife. And it doesn't even stop here. Financial expenses, financial maintenance, all comes only through the hand of the wife. Therefore during the Saptapadi, when bride and groom take 7 steps, the bridegroom, the husband, he gives his home, his assets, his wage, his salary, the in charge of the finances, all to his wife. Because anything that comes through the wife's hands will be auspicious. Otherwise, men can make some bad decisions in life. Especially when it comes to investments. Sorry, I've also made some of those myself. And therefore, the Dharma Shastra explains, because the wife is the foundation of every successful marriage, therefore the wife can never be disrespected. The husband, not even in Swapna, not even in a dream, can the husband raise his voice to the wife. The Dharma Shastra explains this point very clearly to the bride and groom for a successful marriage life. He says, Yatra naryastu pujyate ramante sarvadevata, where the wife is worshipped, where the wife is honored, in those homes, Krishna, Lakshmi, all great virtues appear. But where the wife is dishonored and disrespected, disease, financial losses, disharmony, various types of calamities, knock on that door and ask for entrance. And therefore the wife is given so much respect, so much honor, because at the time of marriage, the time where the Grihastha Ashram actually began, Krishna Bhagavan explains, Prajapati Vishnu Devatakam, that this bride is actually the bride of God. Krishna is the supreme enjoyer, Bhoktaram Yagitapasam, Sarvaloka Maheshwaram, and all of us are to be enjoyed. And therefore, the bride who is the bride of Krishna's first is sent by God to be our associate and our companion in life ahead. And because the wife is a representation of God, therefore the wife is treated in those words with great care, great respect, and great devotion. And similarly, the husband also has various roles that are aligned to him. And when husband and wife understands one's spiritual representation, one's spiritual integrity is kept in place, only such marriages are actually grihastha. Otherwise, the scriptures call them, the Bhagavad explains, griha medhi. A marriage life which is based upon the principles of each other, a marriage life which is based upon the principles of society, a marriage life which is based upon the principles of the time and the place, is a residence for calamity. Because eternal laws apply in every time, place, and circumstance. And it is always very, very natural for those souls who have left the spiritual world to come into the material world to exploit, to be self-egoistic. It is very, very easy for husband and wife to also exercise those qualities of exploitation, those qualities of trying to lord it over upon each other. And that becomes the root cause of calamity and distress. And therefore, these laws of the Grihastha Ashram are the principle and the most important laws for every marriage life. Because only when, in a family, such laws are to be understood and followed, only those families can practically, on a day-to-day basis, explain the beauty of the Grihastha Ashram. Otherwise, the Grihasthas or the family life is considered to be an inferior position. It's considered to be something which is not really on the spiritual path, something which cannot raise one's consciousness to some higher types of realizations and elevations, and that most definitely is not suitable for one's soul. But on the other hand, you find that the Grihastha Ashram, amongst all the three ashrams, is extremely important and completely full, completely empowered to be a source of all the beauty, the love, the devotion that Krishna enjoins his devotees to have. And therefore, the Grihastha Ashram is considered to be the support and the foundation of the entire Varna and Ashram. Now, this was just about husband and wife. Can you imagine what those laws and those words of Krishna are towards our children and our progeny? How to give birth, how to raise children in such a way that not only do they become a great delight in the eyes of Krishna, but become a great asset to one's family, a great source of joy and success to the entire nation and community. It's a vast subject. Family life is a vast subject which takes many hours to discuss. But I hope in this very small presentation, which I gave in exactly 35 minutes, you've been able to appreciate and at least thought or think about what Krishna says are those very small steps to success for a family life. Thank you very much for listening. Hare Krishna. We actually have 3 minutes left before the doors open. See, we Britishers are very good with timing. Does anybody have any questions?